So, I mean, I think some of what we're hearing is that you could write a lot of business plans and you could write a lot of strategies, but actually when you kind of arrive on the field, however much the battlefield presents itself, it is going to be about personal understanding, negotiation, kind of, you know, instincts, many, many of these things, which leadership, it all trains you leaders forever until we die. That leadership isn't about what you've written on a page, although it can be useful to go back to the page and say, well, why did I want to do this? So, Hassan, I know that your expertise has been about creating the architecture onto which to hang idealism. And I wonder whether you'd like to talk about how you frame risk, and then perhaps also about, you know, whether you feel that's a risk for you to have turned yourself into an expert on risk.
Yes. Well, yeah, thank you. It's a very good question. I mean, what differentiates me from perhaps the rest of the panel is that what my specialism is analysing risk. I'm an analyst of risk. I have a particular interest in developing understandings of risk which enable policies, public policies in particular, to be constructed to enable artists to take risk. And, of course, one of the things about that's distinctive about risk is a very complex. You could spend the entire day trying to deconstruct what risk actually means. But I think what's been apparent from a number of the comments is that risk, there are a number of contradictions. Not looking before leaping, but at the same time being cautious. Having blind faith when wanting to do something new, but at the same time understanding that in experience there are many people who've had blind faith when doing something new and failed. In fact, a lot more failed, you know, from experience than have actually succeeded, and no one wants to fail. So there are a number of sort of contradictions when one sort of embraces the concept of risk. And I guess really what my my belief is that I'm someone that looks before I leap. And probably the most significant professional risk I've taken is after 15 years of working in the cosy context of mainstream economics in the financial services sector. My last job was in an investment bank. Prior to that, I was a foreign office as an economist in the diplomatic service, and then spent 10 years at the Bank of England. So a very cosy world in many ways. And then really pursuing my passion in the arts and in cultural economics to sort of leave that environment, which was a decision which next to no people understood. Hardly anyone understood in the world I was in previously, and entering into an environment which is a tradition of great hostility towards analysis and economists. So, but that was, I did look before I left. And for me, the question is, what is the balance between between sort of blind faith and looking ahead? And in particular, you know, what does informed risk taking actually look like in the context that we're discussing, in the cultural context? And for me, it's actually not rocket science. I mean, it's about asking important questions, even if we know that asking those questions is difficult and certainly get the answers could be very troublesome. It's about a sustained dedication to answering those questions, and it's accepting the answers to those questions and actually following through the consequences. Now, I wanted to give a sort of a quote here from Nick Starr, who's the executive director at the National Theatre for Mary this year. Those of us who have grown up working in the arts are good at developing hunch and instinct. We are not so good at developing a series of tools, a kind of rigour of analysing things, and then proceeding stepwise through where the analysis takes you to a hypothesis which you can then go back and re-examine and test if you possibly can. Particularly in the theatre, this wonderful thing, however good the show is, and however terrible it will be over. And I think really in this way, in some ways, this sort of quote really captures my belief that it is possible to apply scientific, with a small s, logical sort of reasoning to try and take informed risks in an arts and cultural context. The language of innovation has entered into the cultural policy discourse, of course, in recent years in a very, very heavy way. Those who fund the arts and those in receipt of funding have a duty to continuously encourage innovation. The boards of cultural organisations, and I include museums and galleries in my understanding of this, are or should be the guardians of innovation and risk-taking. These are quotes from Sir Brian McMaster's report to the British government in 2008. This is all well and good, but the question is, what does innovation actually even mean in this context? In some recent work with the Australian cultural economist David Throsby, we tried to dissect what innovation maybe means in an arts and cultural context. We focused on innovation in art form development on the one hand, the idea of pushing forward the frontiers of art, innovation in audience reach, whether that's audience broadening, deepening, or diversifying, innovation in value creation, an allusion was made earlier to the fact that the arts are sort of operating in a mixed economy. There's potential for new forms of cultural value to be created and social value to be created alongside economic and commercial value. And last but not least, innovation in business models, which has also been referred to. And I think, really for me, I mean, it seems a bit of an anathema to think, use the word controlled experimentation in the context of the arts when one thinks of creativity being about taking sort of open risks and breaking through walls. But actually, controlled experimentation and managing innovation in an environment of uncertainty is an established process for managing creativity in non-arts and cultural contexts. And my feeling is, I'm certainly not calling for randomised control trials to be sort of applied in arts and cultural contexts, but I do definitely think there are opportunities for controlled experimentation. And I think that's a difficult concept to embrace. And if I had more time, I might be able to give one or two examples of some controlled experiments that I've been involved with, where I think there are some rather difficult questions that can be addressed through using those sorts of structured methodologies. I think given the time, I probably won't get into those examples now, but if there's any opportunity for questions.